Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. For the next 10 minutes of the program, Dr. Robert George is our guest. You know, there have been some recent gay marriage victories, a surprise in Iowa, and not such a big surprise in Vermont recently. He joins us to talk about those and the gay marriage issue nationally. He's professor of jurisprudence and director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University, and he's author and editor of several books, including The Meaning of Marriage. Dr. George, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much. Todd, nice to be on the show.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, you seem very concerned, you and other advocates against gay marriage seem very concerned about the traditional definition of marriage when it comes to the homosexual misuse of it, but not, why don't we see you trying to pass laws against the heterosexual misuse of the traditional model of marriage?
Where has the person who's been making this argument been? Can't he read? People like myself, Maggie Gallagher, David Blankenhorn, began in the marriage movement with our focus not on homosexuality or same-sex marriage at all, because it wasn't an issue. We began when we noticed the erosion of the institution of marriage under the pressure of no-fault divorce. The introduction of no-fault divorce began to teach people who were coming into marriages that marriage was not a lifetime commitment, that it was actually less than a contract. It could be broken by one party at will. And we began to see the devastating effects upon children primarily, but also upon spouses as well. So all of us began, and we continue to work to rebuild the institution of marriage across the line of fronts, including with no-fault divorce and other types of policies that tend to undermine the institution of marriage. If anything, same-sex marriage is a symptom of a larger failure of understanding of what true marriage actually is and the ends and purposes that it serves, especially the interests of children, erosions that began long before same-sex marriage or homosexuality became a public policy issue.
I'd like your thoughts on the Iowa Supreme Court vote recently that brought gay marriage, at least for the time being, to that Midwest state.
Well, it again reflects a difference in our culture, broadly speaking, between elite and popular opinion. Popular opinion still strongly supports the conjugal conception of marriage as the union of a man and a woman. This is reflected in polls that show support for what's sometimes called traditional marriage, I would just say marriage, at something between 60 and 65% of the American public. And that's true even in liberal areas. Every time marriage, traditional marriage, conjugal marriage has been put to a vote, it has won. The advocates of redefining marriage cannot win when the issue is put to the people. Now, the farther away from the people the decision's made, the less democratic the forum, the more likely elite opinion is to prevail. And in this country, elite opinion is strongly behind a kind of sexual liberationist understanding of sexual morality in general, which would include same-sex marriage, the idea that love makes a family, all that matters is the emotional or affectional relationship. It doesn't have fundamentally to do with children or other traditional concerns. So when the matter shifts into the courts, usually, not every time, certainly some courts have come down in favor of traditional marriage, but there's a much greater chance when it's in the courts that elite opinion will prevail. There's an overwhelming likelihood if it's put to the people. In fact, it's 100% so far, 30 states out of 30 states. Whenever it's been put to the people, conjugal marriage wins.
So what can be done in the face of a judicial fiat like we witnessed in Iowa?
Politics. It's a political question. It's a question of the common good. It's a question for democratic deliberation. And when judges overstep their constitutional authority and presume to resolve by dictate matters in which they have no legitimate place under the Constitution, where they are not being guided by the text or structure or original understanding of the Constitution itself, whether it's the state or federal constitution, but rather simply by their own preferences, their own moral and political beliefs, then the recourse of the people is to the political process, electing representatives at both the state and federal level who will see to it that the courts do not step out of line, who will see to it that people who are confirmed for judicial appointments are people who will stick to the text and structure and logic and original understanding of the Constitution and not usurp the democratic authority of the people. Judges should not be resolving cases based on whether their own political and moral views favor traditional marriage or something else. I wouldn't want judges imposing my particular views. That's not their role. Their role is to honor the Constitution. And where the Constitution limits their authority, it's to respect the limits of those of that authority and let the matter, whether it's abortion, whether it's taxation, whether it's marriage, be resolved by the institutions who've been given authority by the Constitution to resolve it. And in the area of marriage, that is the legislature and the people.
You're a professor of jurisprudence, Dr. George. Do you see younger attorneys, the future occupants of the bench, do you see them being less favorable to judicial activism or more favorable to judicial activism?
I don't think that there's a strong trend in one direction or another. Certainly the situation in the law schools has improved since when I was in law school in the early 1980s. In those days, it was overwhelmingly a pro-judicial activism sort of atmosphere and ethos in law schools, certainly where I was at Harvard, and I think that was true at most other law schools as well. Then in the mid-80s, an organization that was created called the Federalist Society to provide a counterargument in the law schools and in the legal establishment in favor of a truly constitutionalist approach in which judges had to respect, as other actors in the political system must respect, the constitutional limits of their own authority. And the Federalist Society has had a very big impact. There is now a much stronger argument being made by more people, more professors, more students, more lawyers, more judges in the legal world for judicial restraint or for a constitutionalist understanding of the Constitution, one that does not see the Constitution as licensing rule by a judicial elite.
In Vermont, it wasn't the courts, but it was the House and the Senate that overturned the governor's veto of a gay marriage bill. Your thoughts on the legalization of gay marriage in the state of Vermont?
Well, I'm against what they did, but at least they did it the right way. It was not a judicial imposition. There was no usurpation of the power of the people. Rather, both sides went to the legislature. They lobbied. They made their arguments, and the legislature came down in favor of same-sex marriage. That's not the way I would have come down. I regret that. I hope it will be overturned. But I cannot complain and do not complain about the political or constitutional legitimacy of it. You can distinguish that very sharply from Iowa, where the democratic process was simply ignored, where the power of the people, the constitutional authority of the people to govern themselves and establish their own laws was usurped by the courts. That didn't happen in Vermont. So as much as I regret the decision, I don't regret the way the decision was made. The democratic process is the right process. And now I hope that people in Vermont who support the conjugal conception of marriage as a union of husband and wife will go back to the legislature, will get involved in politics, will elect people to the legislature who will support the conjugal conception of marriage and put things back on track as I think they should be.
A little earlier you were talking and you said traditional marriage or perhaps simply marriage. Does the term traditional marriage, that qualifier there, is it in some sense in this debate a concession to those who want to redefine marriage?
Well, that's why I say it would be better just to call it marriage, because what marriage is the union of a man and a woman across that great divide of sex. The two halves of humanity, the two great halves of humanity, are united, and they're united in a particular cause, and that is in a relationship that is in itself apt for the procreation and rearing of children, and where, when it is in place institutionally, the odds are very much increased that as many children as possible will be reared by the mother and father whose union brought them into existence. Children yearn to love and to be loved by both mother and father, whether we're talking about girls or boys. Parents are not interchangeable. You want to be connected to the person who made you, for making the paternal contribution, the male contribution, and the female contribution. We know this from the experience of adopted children who yearn to know about and actually to know and to be known by their biological parents. Now, of course, that can't always be the case, and that's why adoption's a wonderful thing. Where things just work out, where tragedies happen, whether it's death or family breakup or whatever, we do the best that we can. But we need an institutional arrangement in place that will maximize the chances that children will be known and will know and will be loved by and will love the mom and dad who brought them into existence.
Finally, then, how would you respond to someone who says, look, Dr. George, mind your own business. What people do in their own bedrooms is none of your business, none of my business.
Well, I mean, that's a bad argument just generally. If people make bombs in their bedroom, of course, that's everybody's business. If people fix prices in the bedroom, that's everybody's business. Most people think that if people shoot heroin into their arms, that's a matter of public concern and not just private concern, because even apparently private acts have, when they accumulate, when they become widespread, large public consequences. But here it's an even worse argument, because we're not talking about what goes on in a bedroom. We're not talking about whether we're going to ban sodomy or not. We're talking about the public meaning of a public institution that serves an enormous public purpose. It's the original and best Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. No government agency can improve on the family built on marriage when it comes to providing a milieu in which children can be reared to be decent, honorable human beings who understand what the right thing to do is. And any time we erode the institution of marriage, even in what we take to be a compassionate cause or a good cause, as we did with no-fault divorce, we end up harming children. And then we turn our eyes away. We avert our gaze. We pretend it's not happening. Think of all the damage that's come from no-fault divorce. Think of all the children of broken homes that are out there. This wasn't caused by bad people who wanted to hurt children, but by good people who wanted to let people out of unhappy marriages. After all, they reasoned, why is it anybody's business if a couple wants to become divorced? Well, now the consequences of all those private choices are in, and those consequences can be measured in broken relationships, ruined lives, children who are longing with a longing that will not be fulfilled to love and be loved by a mom and dad united in marriage.
Dr. Robert George is professor of jurisprudence and director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University. He's author and editor of several books, including The Meaning of Marriage. You can purchase this book under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Dr. George, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. My pleasure.